Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. I welcome you to this program. Today, special commentary from William Blum, The Anti-Empire Report. Also today, the New York Times and the New McCarthyism, Robert Perry, Consortium News. From Alan Nasser, from Counterpunch, The Coming Plague of Poverty Among the Elderly, Clinton's Plan for Gutting Social Security. And that is still in play, even though she's not the president. Also today, how can we turn things around? I'll be sharing with you what the likely outcome of the next 4 to 8 years would have been if Hillary Clinton was elected. And I'll also share the points of most concern about Donald Trump and his foreign domestic policies, plus the latest on health and healing, including why endurance exercises are very important for slowing down the aging process. And from melatonin in the natural sense from our food, how that can provide a better night's sleep. From the University of Cambridge, our brains are being affected by being overweight. In fact, if you're overweight, your brains are 10 years older than if you were leaner. And also from Harvard University, increased polyphenol intake is linked to better heart health. And bathing in chlorinated water, most people do, may be worse for you than drinking it. And more on health and healing. We have a packed show. I'm not sure we'll have a chance to get to some audio clips, but we do. I want you to hear a discussion of what's happening with the oil companies and the indigenous tribes out west. And also, is there a double standard practiced by the West regarding terrorism that, let's say, in Syria than in Iraq? Because when you hear anything being mentioned by the media about what's being done to stop terrorism in Iraq, it's very heroic. There's no mention of civilian casualties. But anything involving Russia and the Syrian people fighting to overcome ISIS and al-Nusra, well, then it's always something negative. When will we stop reading or listening to the propaganda machines and look for the truth? That will be explored, if not today, then tomorrow. And then the truth about climate change at the EPA. I think you'll find that of interest as well. So let's see how much of this we can get through. I will not be taking calls today because we just don't have the time. I have seen the benefits in my own life, as well as thousands, tens of thousands of athletes I've helped train over the many decades, enduring long-distance training and racing. It's called endurance. Now, you can do it with endurance biking as well. This is the latest from Medical Express. This is a study out of several institutions in Belgium published in Science Advances. Quote, a team of researchers with members from several institutions have found that endurance exercise may play a role in the regulation of telomere transcription. In their peer-reviewed paper, the team describes their study of volunteers exercising, their findings, and what the results might mean for people in general. Most people know that eating healthy and getting regular exercise can lead indirectly to a healthier life. But until now, there has not been any evidence that doing so has a direct impact on the aging and longevity. In this new effort, the researchers report that they have found evidence of endurance exercising releasing chemical factors that may produce a class of molecules that promote longer telomeres and, by extension, longer life and slower aging. Now, this audience knows that telomeres are the caps of repeat-containing RNA on the ends of chromosomes. I give a simple explanation. Think of your shoestring. at the end of it, your shoelace, you've got that little plastic piece that keeps from unraveling. That's your telomeres. Now, if you're not exercising, if you're drinking alcohol, if you're overweight, if you have a toxic diet, that unravels very fast. The quicker that unravels, the telomeres unravel, the shorter your lifespan. The longer the lifespan. And this is showing that there's a direct connection between exercising for 45 minutes or more per day and lengthening the telomeres. So, that's good. So, do your exercise. My suggestion, 1 hour a day, 6 days a week. And do different types. Power walk once, jog once, swimming, doing VersaClimbing, and biking. Those are all good. As a country, we have a sleep problem. We're not getting enough sleep. And when you don't get enough sleep, your immune system is substantially adversely affected. And there are some things we can do that are natural and non-toxic. One is we can stop eating within 3 hours of going to bed, hence our blood sugar won't be spiked. Separately, we can make sure the room is dark. We can put earplugs in if there's noise. And we can make sure that we have no electromagnetic pulses coming in within 6 to 8 feet of our head, like a television. You may turn the television off, but did you actually turn the power off? If you don't turn the power off to a computer or a television, it stays on, and that's throwing out electromagnetic pulse. Cell phones are a big culprit, especially on young people. They keep them right beside their head. That's increasing the risk of all forms of brain cancers. So if you eliminate all that, eliminate the problems, then I do something very easy, and it works for me. About a half hour before going to bed, I sit down and I write down the projects that I'd like to address for the next day. What are those projects? Why are they important? What priorities should they be in? And that's what I list. Just that alone then disconnects me at my brain level from having to think about those when I go to sleep, because I put down what I have to address. That means you hit the pillow and you just go to sleep. But if you haven't resolved that, now you're going to be trying to resolve all those issues while you're laying in bed, and that causes insomnia. So there's one other thing you can do according to these studies, and there are multiple studies, and that is you can consume melatonin. Mela, M-E-L-A, tonin, T-O-N-I-N. It's been documented that the body's own melatonin production helps us fall asleep. Yet research on supplemental melatonin has not been consistent. But one of the things we can do is we can get melatonin production going, and it stimulates the pineal gland, and that helps produce more in the body. And also, it helps reduce our stress levels. So 1 to 3 milligrams of melatonin is the best thing to take before you go to sleep. And stay away from the caffeine at night, because that's also not good. So that can make a difference. And there are some foods that are higher in it and other foods. But if you have a good vegan diet and you have a good selection of fruits and vegetables, then you're going to be getting that in your body. Brains that are in people who are overweight are 10 years older than a lean person. University of Cambridge, quote, "From middle age, the brains of obese individuals display differences in white matter similar to those in lean individuals 10 years their senior." And our brains naturally shrink with age, but scientists have increasingly recognized that obesity, already linked with conditions like diabetes and cancer and heart disease, may also affect the onset and progression of brain aging. And this was a cross-sectional study, in other words, a study that looks at different data from different individuals, and it was published in Neurobiology of Aging. So, when you lose the weight, you're decreasing that extra weight of the brain, and your brain is going to live longer. And finally, two things. One is that when you increase the amount of fruits in your diet, especially those rich in flavones and anthocyanins, you're reducing the risk of stroke and heart attack. This was done at the University of East Anglia in the United Kingdom and Harvard School of Public Health. And they found that, quote, the highest average intake of anthocyanins were associated with a 14% lower risk of heart attack, and that's and also 22% less risk of stroke. Quote, these compounds are commonly consumed through fruit intake because they are present in either red or blue fruits or citrus fruits, and therefore readily incorporated into the habitual diet. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So eat your fruits and have less heart attack and stroke. And finally, well, if you shower and you don't have a shower filter that filters out the chlorine, you're breathing in a lot of chlorine gas. The hotter the shower, the more chlorine gas, and it's a known carcinogen. This is separate. This is when you bathe in it. Quote, bathing in chlorinated water may be worse for you than drinking it because it bypasses your liver. Chlorine, by the way, is the most widely used disinfectant in public water systems in the United States and around the world. But chlorine is also a toxic gas that has been used as a chemical weapon because it effectively attacks all living cells. Chlorine not only kills the bad bacteria in the water, it also kills the good bacteria in our bodies and on our skin. So when you drink chlorinated water, it destroys your beneficial intestinal flora, or gut bacteria, and a wave of recent studies are just beginning to understand how vital that gut flora is to your physical and mental health. And results of another study show that chlorine has been shown to diminish vitamins E and C and the fatty acids in the skin, potentially resulting in eye and skin irritations. That's why swimmers who use vitamin C and E skin spray to combat rashes. But rashes appear to be the least of the health concerns stemming from topical exposure to chlorine. A study in Belgium published in Pediatrics found that teens were 800% at higher risk of developing asthma or allergies if they spent more than 1,000 hours swimming in chlorinated pools compared to kids who usually swim in pools using a copper-silver disinfectant method. Of course, your best method of all is ozone in the water. Municipal water, it's not clean, and when they put the cancer-causing chlorine in there, and you're down there, and your face is there, and you're breathing it in, not good. So, because chlorine can be absorbed through your skin, and that makes it more dangerous because it bypasses the liver, which filters out many harmful chemicals. This was published in Scientific America. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. All over the world, we appreciate all the emails, suggestions, programs, topics that you find important. And that's why we do the programs we do. For example, tomorrow, noon to 1 o'clock, 1 hour on understanding the truth of Putin's Russia. I will be doing a special commentary on, do you know about Vladimir Putin's religious views? He's been called an atheist Hitler. He's not an atheist. In fact, he has very strong religious views. And what we've been told about him and his country is wrong. So, a 1 hour in-depth showing you all the propaganda. And why? Because the moment someone starts to demonize someone as a Hitler, you know when the media is uncritical. And going along with that, they intend to have a regime change or a coup. They did it with Hugo Chavez and Venezuela. That's what they do. That's what they did with Gaddafi. And look at that mess. And Assad in Syria. Look at that mess. So that'll be tomorrow, 1 hour, information you will not hear anywhere else and have not heard anywhere else. I'll even go through some of the Gnostic readings that Putin requires all of his cabinet members to read. I'm interested now in thinking about Louis the 16th. He needed a revolution. Napoleon needed 2 historic military defeats. The Spanish Empire and the New World needed multiple revolutions. The Russian Tsar Nicholas II needed a communist revolution. The Austro-Hungarian and Ottoman Empires needed World War I. Nazi Germany needed World War II. Imperial Japan needed 2 atomic bombs. The Portuguese Empire in Africa needed a military coup at home. The Soviet Empire needed Mikhail Gorbachev. The question is, what will the American Empire need? I don't believe anyone will consciously launch World War III. The situation now is more like the eve of World War I, when great powers were armed and ready to go on with any incident that sets things off. Ever since Gorbachev naively ended the Cold War, the hugely overarmed United States has been actively surrounding Russia with weapon systems, aggressive military exercises, NATO expansion. At the same time, in recent years, the demonization of Vladimir Putin has reached war propaganda levels. Russians have every reason to believe that the United States is preparing a war against them and are certain to take defensive measures. This mixture of excessive military preparation and propaganda against an evil enemy makes it very easy for some trivial incident to blow up. Quote, that's Diana Johnstone, author of Queen of Chaos, The Misadventures of Hillary Clinton. In September of 2013, President Obama stood before the United Nations General Assembly and declared, quote, I believe America is exceptional. The following year at the United Nations, the president classified Russia as one of the 3 threats to the world, along with the Islamic State and the Ebola virus. On March 9, 2015, President Barack Obama declared Venezuela, quote, an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States, end quote. Really, Mr. President? You really believe that Venezuela is a threat to the United States? Based upon what? Vladimir Putin, speaking at the United Nations last year, addressing U.S., he said its foreign policy, quote, this is speaking now to the United States. Do you realize what you've done? And the question is, does even the liberal community know what it supported? Here is what you support when you support either party, because they both represent the same foreign policy. They are both backed by the same group of oligarchs, Council on Foreign Relations, the same power base, the same media support. The United States, in its exceptionalism, Mr. Obama, has attempted to overthrow more than 50 foreign governments, most of which were democratically elected. We dropped bombs on the people of more than 30 countries. We attempted to assassinate more than 50 foreign leaders. We attempted to suppress a populist or national movement in 20 countries. We grossly interfered in democratic elections in at least 30 countries. Plus, although not easily quantified, we have been involved in the practice of torture more than any other country in the world for over a century. Not just performing the actual torture, but teaching it, School of the Americas, providing the manuals, and furnishing the equipment, black sites. On October 28, 2016, Russia was voted off the UN Human Rights Council. At the same time, Saudi Arabia won a second term, uncontested. No one said that they had done anything wrong. Does anyone have George Orwell's current telephone number? What am I missing? We have 2 secretaries of state, under Hillary Clinton and under John Kerry, both acknowledging the importance of Saudi Arabia as an overseer of human rights. At the same time, they're beheading more people in 1 year than ISIS, crucifying more people after they were beheaded, that's an unusual act, and also killing more gays than any other country on the planet, and beating women for what would be a non-infraction in the United States. Women have no rights except those few that are deemed appropriately given. Women are the full property of a man in Saudi Arabia. They teach the most despicable, destructive form of Islam. It's called Wahhabism, and it's rejected roundly and rightly so by the vast majority of people believing in Islam. They have no patience for any other religion. In fact, if you chose to practice Christianity, Judaism, Jainism, Buddhism, and even other forms of, let's say, a Shia branch of Islam, you could be prosecuted, persecuted. You have no freedom of speech, no freedom of assembly, no multiple parties. No, there's only one party, the monarchy party, approximately 5,200 individuals. There's rampant poverty in Saudi Arabia, but there's also rampant abuse of people there. In Hillary Clinton's emails, WikiLeaks showed us that Hillary Clinton acknowledged in a letter to John Podesta that it was Saudi Arabia that was arming, training, and protecting ISIS, al-Nusra, and other terrorist groups. Those of us who simply looked at the battlefield consequences knew this. For example, how do you have 12,000 oil tankers, 12,000, going out from Turkey, our ally, NATO ally, stealing the oil of Syria, a sovereign nation, stealing the oil from Iraq, taking it back in to Turkey, where it is sold on the black market for as low as $20 a barrel, that money going to ISIS, that money also going to al-Nusra, that money going to the Erdogan's son, having hospitals specifically in Turkey that would treat the radical Islamic soldiers that were injured. How many of those trucks did the United States destroy in 14 months? How about not one? Not one. We were supplying the war materials for them to be genocidalist. We were supplying it to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, who was then bring it back through to the terrorist groups. Why is it that this was not an issue? How could we say we're fighting terror when we are the primary supporters of terror? Take away their money, because that's what Russia did. First week of they came in, boom, all those oil tankers got blown up, and then we got angry. You're killing our terrorists, and we're not going to tolerate that. Well, they were stopping the terrorists. We didn't like it, so we got the New York Times to control the lies, and CNN. They're so easy. They're very cheap to buy. So there you have it. So you have Russia voted off the UN Human Rights Council. At the same time, Saudi Arabia won a second term uncontested. 1 million refugees from Washington's warfare are currently running over Europe looking for a place to stay. They're running from Afghanistan. They're running from Iraq. They're running from Libya, Somalia, Syria, and Pakistan, and Yemen. They're running from conflicts supported by the Democratic president, the Democratic and so-called liberal Secretary of State. Why is it that the liberal media did not challenge this? But the progressive media did. Cornel West did. Glenn Ford did. Gerald Celante did. Chris Hedges did. But then they were considered too radical to be accepted into polite liberal community conversation. Germany is taking in many Syrian refugees because of its World War II guilt. What will the United States do in the future because of its guilt? That's what we're looking at. Who said this? This was said in June of 2002. Quote, the plan is for the United States to rule the world. The overt theme is unilateralism, but it is ultimately a story of domination. It calls for the United States to maintain its overwhelming superiority and prevent new rivals from rising up to challenge it on the world stage. It calls for dominion over friends and enemies alike. It says not that the United States must be more powerful or most powerful, but that we must be absolutely powerful. That was Vice President Dick Cheney, protected from all of his crimes against humanity by Barack Obama and the full support of the Democratic power elite in Washington, who did not want to open up any trials of those who lied to get us into these conflicts. And that's how it works. Dick Cheney was joined by Liz Cheney in this piece from 2015, Why the World Needs a Powerful America. Quote, we are, as a matter of empirical fact and undeniable history, the greatest force for good the world has ever known. Security, freedom for millions of people around the globe have depended upon America's military, economic, political, and diplomatic might. Really? Okay. Could we offer a challenge? Libya was the most prosperous nation in Africa, had the highest educational standard, 84%, more than any other country, more freedom for women than any Arab nation in the entire Middle East, more women in positions of power, no debt, everyone was given a home, free medicine, free education, and they had no crime. So how do we bring freedom, peace, and democracy to Libya? That was Hillary Clinton. Why hasn't she been held accountable for that? In power or out is irrelevant. Wasn't it State Department spokesperson Mark Toner who said, Assad must go even if Syria goes with him? Well, that's kind of cute, isn't it? Who are we to determine the fate of a country and its people? What have we done when it came to Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia? Look at those countries, Syria. We created that crisis. We've taken no responsibility. You see, a successful American regime change operation in Syria will cut across definite interests of the Russian state. These include the likely use of Syria as a new pipeline route to bring gas from Qatar to the eastern market, thereby undercutting Gazprom, Russia's largest corporation and biggest exporter. Assad's refusal to consider such a route played no small role in Qatar's pouring billions of dollars into arms and funds into the Syrian civil war on behalf of the anti-Assad forces. Iran signed the nuclear accords with the United States earlier this year by agreeing to stop what it had never done. Any Iranian nuclear ambition, real or imagined, is of course a result of American hostility towards Iran, and not the other way around. And yet we can't see our own folly. If the European Union were an independent and rational government, it would absolutely forbid any member country from stockpiling American nuclear weapons or hosting a U.S. anti-ballistic missile base anywhere in their country, especially on Russia's borders. But we are living by the notion of full-spectrum dominance, a term the Pentagon loves to use to refer to total control over the planet, meaning we control the land, the sea, the air, the space, the outer space, and cyberspace. Can you imagine any other country speaking this way? Henry Kissinger, at the Paris Peace Talks in September 1970, said, quote, I refuse to believe that a little fourth-rate power like North Vietnam does not have a breaking point. Got that wrong, didn't you? We broke, they didn't. We had the Air Force, they didn't. They had no planes, they had no ships. They had no nuclear power, they had nothing. Oh, I forgot. They had the desire for freedom. In 2010, WikiLeaks released a cable sent to the U.S. embassies by then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She wrote, quote, Saudi Arabia remains a critical finance support for Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, al-Nusra, and other terrorist groups worldwide. End quote. Surely this resulted in at least many people on the left saying, how can we support you? Because you know who the terrorists are being supported by. You know who's weaponizing them. You know who's paying for it. Surely you would denounce this. Not a word. And that's how it goes. So you see, what we're dealing with today is we're dealing with contradictions between what someone says and what they do. Now to the other issue. I believe instead of the people on the left or right wringing their hands, crying, being angry, blaming someone for this person or that person losing and that person winning, instead, why don't we look for what is a remarkable moment? First, I'm looking at this remarkable moment. What if Hillary Clinton would have won? Now, this is not specious speculation. That is not hypothesis. This is fact. This is based upon her statements and her actions that we can prove. Let me look at the economy. Had Hillary Clinton lost the primaries as she would have, had it not been rigged, and had Bernie Sanders won, and when Bernie Sanders was asked by Jill Stein, why don't we work together, had he done that, he would have overwhelmingly beaten Donald Trump. It'd be a different day today. Who's responsible for that? Because we have absolute irrefutable proof from WikiLeaks that Hillary Clinton and Deborah Wasserman Schultz and the entire power structure at the Democratic National Committee and the media, 65 members of the media, were complicit in stacking everything against Bernie. When Bernie had 25,000 people and Hillary Clinton on the same day had 500 people, we made it look like she was the winning person. When he trounced her in the debates, we made it look like she was winning. So had there been any legitimacy on the left, then they would have immediately swung towards Bernie Sanders. And here's why. We would have a better world starting today with Bernie Sanders. Here's exactly where Clinton stood. Here's where Sanders stood. Progressive issues. The repeal of the worst labor law, the Taft-Hartley, which intrudes on free speech. Sanders says, yes, repeal it. Clinton, no. On halting nuclear energy, yes. Sanders says, halt nuclear energy. Clinton says, no. In fact, let's commit an additional $1 trillion. Now, Clinton didn't have $1 trillion to spend on de-ghettoizing America. Clinton didn't have $1 trillion on feeding 18 million hungry children or providing homes in places where people need to live or food for them to eat or jobs for them. That she didn't have a penny for, but $1 trillion plus for her friends in the military-industrial complex to do new nuclear? Yes. A moratorium on genetically modified foods? Bernie Sanders? Yes. Hillary Clinton? How can I do that when I'm taking money from Monsanto and one of the top people in my campaign is a Monsanto person? Repeal the DARK Act and mandate GMO labeling. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. On a national minimum wage of $15 or higher immediately. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act that your husband and you, along with the leading Republicans at the time, gutted, that had been protecting us for over 50 years. Sanders, yes, reinstate Glass-Steagall. Clinton, no. Repeal Citizens United, get rid of it. Sanders, yes. Clinton, maybe. That means no. Stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Legalize marijuana. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Have universal health care. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Break up the big banks. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Repeal the Patriot Act. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Sever your support of Saudi Arabia. Both no. That was one of his limitations. Dramatically reduce defense budget spending. Both no. They both supported the military-industrial complex. Reduce overseas military bases. They both said no. normalize relations with Russia. They both said no. Oppose Israel's apartheid of state and of the Palestinian people. They both said no. Decrease arsenals of nuclear weapons. Both said no. And cease aggressive threats against China. Both said no. Stop NATO containment of Russia. They both said no. Reduce prisons and inmates. Yes, Sanders would. No, Clinton wouldn't. Free public university education. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Some incremental thing, whatever that means. It means nothing. It's platitude talk. Campaign finance reform. Sanders, yes. Clinton, let me think on it. Overhaul the pharmaceutical industry's pricing. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Expand Social Security. Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Overhaul the National Security Agency's surveillance of citizens. Sanders says, yes, let's overhaul it. Clinton said, no. Have internet freedom. Sanders says, yes. Clinton, no. Now, just on those issues alone, amongst the two leading supposed people, Democrat, liberal candidates, the game was stacked. Had Bernie Sanders been allowed to run honestly, he would have won, and he would have won the presidency. So the moment you start complaining about Donald Trump, why don't you look at who was right there, who would have won it easily? Take some responsibility for it. So let's go beyond that. What would the economy look like today? There would be absolutely no way you're going to touch the banks. The too big to fail would get bigger. If they got hurt, we would bail them out. She would rush to revise the TTIP and the TTP and make sure that they were passed with some slight modifications, but nothing that would help us. She would not reform or repeal NAFTA or CAFTA. She would expand the World Trade Organization's trade agreements and promote more corporate globalization. There would be no job developments in the United States. There would be more outsourcing. She would not do anything to stop payday loans of 1,000%. She would not close down debtors' prisons. She would not slow down the privatization of prisons. And there would be no student loan forgiveness plan. She would expand the military-industrial complex, even more aggressive. She would have a full-spectrum, a dominance military doctrine in place. And we could expect the military budget to go up by at least 15%. She would increase from 920-some bases to even possibly as much as 1,000 bases. And she would further expand on NATO's presence on Russia's borders. There would be no normalizations of relations with Russia. She would approve a no-fly zone in Syria that would absolutely lead to a conflict with Russia. She would continue her close ties and the money she gets from Saudi Arabia or Foundation and Qatar. She would continue to sponsor regime change, including another coup in Venezuela. She would take no responsibility for apartheid in Palestine. She would support Israel's aggression against Iran. She would place trade agreements in the China seas against China. She would increase AFRICOM in Africa. She would continue Obama's drone war and executive order of assassinations. There'd be no repeal of the Patriot Act. There'd be no change in the National Defense Authorization Act. She would still make sure that every single whistleblower, anyone wanting to come through forward with the truth, would be dealt with harshly, as she has stated. She would deal with Snowden and Julian Assange. She would prosecute the enemies of the state. That is typical of how the Clintons always have acted. I'll give you something to think about, because I already know the answer. Why don't you look for some journalist in America who have the truth to reopen behind the scenes what really happened with the Whitewater investigation and find out what happened with all the evidence they had and why they did not go forward? It was not because of a lack of evidence. There have been absolutely no reform to campaigns, none. And she would allow Big Pharma to charge whatever they want, gouge as much as they want. She also is a big believer in mandatory vaccines. The next thing we would see would be adults being required to have vaccines. If you're caught with marijuana, too bad, you go to jail. She would not change the war on drugs. So she would bail out the major polluters. She would continue to support all their subsidies for hydrofracking, oil, gas, and nuclear. And she would continue to promote her clean coal and clean oil. And you would see the continuation of the exploitation of prison labor in the incarcerated prison groups. No free public education. She would promote charter schools over public education. Now, all these are not speculative. These are what she has supported, and she would continue. We will see the many things that the mercurial megalomaniac Trump will do, but why am I still positive at this moment? Because I see an opportunity here, and that is this. I believe that it's time that we stop believing that a two-party system has any intent on doing anything except its own self-perpetuation. There are approximately 200,000 companies and individuals who are in this golden circle in Washington. They're the people who are able to clean a duffel bag of dirty laundry for a soldier, exclusively the only ones allowed to do it, charging $100 for a 50-cent cleaning bag of laundry. They get 100, they make $99.50 profit. That's what it means. If you're going to spend $1 trillion on a nuclear program, someone's going to make the money. If you're going to posture in a new Cold War, someone's going to make the armaments. So everyone who profits lines up. They give you undying support, and in return, you give them contracts. The pay-to-play at the ideological level is complete. So, why don't we look at the people who didn't vote, or the people who voted for Gary Johnson, people who voted for Jill Stein, even the people who voted for Trump, instead of demeaning them, which is typical of the insensitivity to what it is to understand a person who may have no real political ideology. They just want to take care of their family. I lived in Katanning, Pennsylvania, a very poor Polish coal mining town where people couldn't afford anything. And when I lived there, I was surprised by what people did to keep their spirits up, what they did to believe in something. They had no one advocating for them. When it was no longer profitable to have those factories there, they were closed down without any thought of the people who generation after generation had worked there. So where do you go if all the promises made are not delivered to you? We're told, but we're in a booming economy. How can you be booming when you have 102 million Americans capable of working or not included in your workforce? What kind of perverse, degenerate economic alchemy is that? By the most minimal standards, you have 28% of Americans unemployed. That's minimum. And all these great stores? Well, my brother, Stephen, happens to be the major advocate for small business people in New York City for 35 years. He volunteers his time, and he told me the figures recently. Over 140,000 small businesses closed, 8 people per business. You're dealing with several million people in New York. They have to struggle to find another job. Why? Because the landlords control the system. It's too expensive to do business. But it's not just them who have no advocates. Those individuals who have no one on their behest working for them. Do you think the people on the city council, do you think the mayor, you think the governor, you think all these other clowns give a damn about anyone except themselves? As long as you're willing to support them, as long as you can keep them in power, they'll give you. And we see what they give, both legally and illegally. Here are some other things we're not talking about. Ralph Lauren, they're closing 50 stores. Sears, they're closing 10 stores. Kmart, 68. Macy's, 40. That brings a total of 720 stores closed by Macy's. They are Kohl's is closing 18. Target 13, Sports Authority, all of them, 463 stores closed, Children's Place, 200, and that's just a small list I have. Each one of those employs a lot of people, so you're talking about billions, tens of millions of dollars taken out of the people's paychecks, capacity to pay their bills. So who's advocating for them? So on the one hand, when someone votes for someone that we wouldn't vote for, it's not our ideal. Did it ever occur that maybe they are not aware of how the political system really works? Because we have mastered the art of just offering platitudes, smiling, being charismatic. You just had 8 years of the first black president. Exactly what did he do to improve the lives of those unemployed blacks, Latinos, and whites in America? Let me see those numbers. And don't tell me that getting someone in a season like the summer to work tending bar or in a restaurant, that that's gainful employment. It is not. Why can't you ever be honest about anything? So what do we do with this? It's a mess. But it's a mess to which we also have an opportunity. I believe that the future now, more than ever before, is where people have lost hope and faith in the media, rightly so, in the political parties, doubly rightly so. They are absolutely corrupt. Both parties are run by neo-fascists. The fact that one may be a megalomaniac and another a sociopath is irrelevant. They're all interested in power. So how do you correct with a neoliberal philosophy, neo-fascist outcomes? You don't. One leads to the other. That's the globalization mindset. They're just going to keep closing factories, making money, putting more money into the hands of people who don't need it and taking it out of the people who do. Here's solutions. One, let's start working on things that we can do something about without relying upon. Here's the three big mistakes. We rely upon corporate America trickle down. It's never worked. We just had 32 years between Ronald Reagan and his Chicago School of Economics trickle down to Milton Friedman School to Bush, Clinton, and Obama. It's failed. We have gotten worse, not better. Our environment degraded more. Those who have the money and power, even more money and power, and those who are struggling more. So why don't we say no to big government, no to corporate interest, and instead start working at the local community level where we have information that we create and not create information based upon how strict or rigid or how self-righteous our ideology is. Stuff all that. You want to alienate everyone in your life except the three people that you know? Then go out and beat your chest and say, I'm right because I'm a Marxist, a communist, a socialist, whatever you're saying. You've just isolated one because you're selling your ideology and not the principles behind it. Instead, work upon five issues. Let's say global warming. Let's say employment at the local level, de-ghettoizing America. Let's say improving our health. Let's say taking money out of politics and bringing responsibility back in. Things we can understand. You first collect the information from about 2,000 progressive minds who create the material. It's vetted for accuracy, and then it's shared. You share it at the local level. And by sharing this on an ongoing basis, it's a series of articles, information pieces, documentaries, all forms that you can share that. That then is given to people who can then take this new information, and once they become familiar with it and why it's important, they can then turn around and start to motivate people at the local level, showing up at PTA meetings, showing up at school board meetings, showing up and giving information out. Because you can yell at someone, that might get their attention, it will not get their support. Or you can say, friend, would you be willing to look at something that shares a different perspective, that is fully authenticated, to see if in any way this could allow you to alter your position on whatever this issue is. And then you start to build coalitions across the country at the local level. And then from there you begin to get people on local station boards, local community boards. You run them for offices at the state level. You might make it in some states banning the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, and demanding everyone take an oath. Did you meet in private with any member of ALEC over the last 35 years and take their rules and make them into laws, their bills? The person says, yes. Well, why didn't you tell us that? That's deceiving us, the voter. So you should leave office. But if you don't have that information, how are you going to share it? Let's just say, I'll give you an example. Let's say that we were able to get one community in America, let's say Canton, New Jersey, one of the poorest in the whole country. When I was over there filming Poverty Inc., police stopped me and said, you can't go in this street. I said, why not? So take a look. He said, you won't make it a block. There are gangs all over this place. I said, well, I'm going to go anyhow. So I told the staff, stay in the car. I didn't want to get it hurt if that should happen. So I went into a barbershop. Guy looks at me and says, what are you doing? I said, friend, I'm here to tell your story. I believe that your story of what this community was, why you moved here, what you do here, has not been told. He said, well, you're right about that. I said, would you like to tell me about what it was like when they had RCA Victor here, Campbell Soup here, the big shipyards here, where everybody, there was no crime, everybody had a good living? He's, I remember that. And he starts talking. I said, can you let some of the other people down the street here, including these gang members, know? I'd like to talk to their story. Have it. Sure. Spent the whole day, never had a problem, because it was there to learn from people to share their story. Now, imagine if we got a community to give us one block, just one block. You give us the worst block, a block that no one lives on. Everything's decrepit. You bulldoze it down. And then from the community, we bring together the people who, what do you want here? We'd like a park. Okay. We'd like a community garden year-round, hydroponics. We'd like a place where people who've got problems physically, nutrition problems, lose the weight, overcome diabetes. Good. We'd like to get people off drugs, out of crime, and help them when they're going through crisis. Fine. We can get those. We want people to have a place to live. We got homeless people. All right, so let's put up some nice housing here where people can't buy it. You're not gentrifying it. There's no profit motive. Charge 15% of what the person earns. So if they're on welfare, it's just 15% of what they're on welfare. So even a person on welfare, the poorest of the poor, will have a place to stay. A comfortable place. Families, you build a special place for families. Theater. Yeah. Why should be left out of the culture and arts and singing and learning music because we're poor? You shouldn't be. What about having people who can help us with our children? Tutor us in languages and skills. We can do that. You see, we, the people, working together without stuff ideologies in your back pocket. They're alienating. They're isolating. They're insulting. But someone who needs that because they have nothing else to identify in life, they'll keep bannering that. See how much love that creates. See who wants to work with you. Work with people from your heart. Work with people as if they're sacred beings. Do not look at the circumstances you're working in. Rather, look at what those circumstances are going to evolve into when you commit to helping the people without profit as a motive, but turn that neighborhood around. Now, in 6 months to a year, you've got a model block, unlike any block in America. And you can say, now, if we could do this, and we did it without the corporate, we didn't need the government and its massive corrupt bureaucracy, we didn't have the federal government giving us anything. We did it on our own. It was built by the community with all the positive input from all these great people around the country. We got the architects, we got the builders, we got the community planners, the urban planners. We all wanted to see a better country, and when you do that, you've got to link arms, and you've got to say, friend, I'm here for you. I got your back. So, can we do that? You bet. And then you say, if we could do it here, in Camden, the worst city on the worst block in the worst neighborhood in America, why can't we do it everywhere else? And the answer is you could. And then why can't we also start reforesting And why can't we put up the newest solar? Why can't we put up the new wind power that is only about 10 foot high with no blades that can destroy the sound or birds? The new technologies. Why can't we have a water purification system that purifies all the water? So if every other house around you, the city's giving you polluted water, you're drinking clean water. You see, I believe in looking at the solutions. I do not believe in arguing with the people who want to tell me why something can't be done. They are absolutely right. If you say you can't do it, you're right, friend. I'm not going to argue. Every day, people sit across my desk who have terminal illness. They've been told there's nothing more we can do. And the doctor's right. But I don't tell them there's nothing more you can do. I say there is something you can do. And let's do it. So if you say it can't be done, you're right. If I say it can be done, I'm right. We're both going to be right. The difference is, 4 years from now, there'll just be more anger because of all the ineptitude of the Trump and his whole institutional narcissism. But we can also be building a massive movement at the level right now across America. That's my interest. That's what I want to do. And I believe now's the time to do it. Remember, from 1965 to 1977, Ralph Nader and a group of people called Nader's Raiders, young idealists, did more to protect America, did more without being political to cause laws to be written than anyone else in American history. And yet then he became unnecessary and an impediment. Boy, how foolish was that. We have to look back on the truths that he lived by and say we can recreate a new America today, starting and keeping ourselves at the grassroots level, and we will. On an upcoming program, I'll tell you some of the things I'm willing to do. I'm willing out of my own pocket to put some desks in, some computers and phones, and get people who are willing to work on this kind of project, because it's going to take years, but it's all meant to give people information to empower them, and through that empowerment and information, get them the tools to start making change. And then watch some people who didn't vote because of disgust for how corrupt the system is, who will vote because of they're voting for something that is a completely different appreciation of life. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.